This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
We are going to go to a very special guest right now, and it's been a big past few months for Craig Foster, who spearheaded the Save Hakeem campaign. However, this week we heard from Football Federation Australia that they have thrown their support behind AFC President Sheikh Salman, saying he's actually the best credentialed candidate for the role despite the incumbent failing to advocate for Hakeem Alarabi's release. SBS's chief football analyst and former Socceroos captain Craig Foster joins us now. Craig, it's a delight to have you on FNR.
Oh, it's always nice to speak to you guys. Thanks for the invitation.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. And Craig, we'd just love your thoughts and your reaction to FFA's endorsement of Sheikh Salman and what this says about Australia's governing body.
Yeah, I think it's a real challenge for Australian sport, actually. And we know that global sport is challenged. I mean, if you look around the world, what happened in football with FIFA and the whole bladder era, which ultimately came crashing down, and across other sports as well, and all the influences out of the Gulf and so on. You've got Infantino now with Saudi Arabia encouraging him to, you know, increase the level of load on the players. All of these issues around sport governance. And, you know, we've just been through a process which has magnified all of those. One of the reasons that Hakeem was in so much trouble is because sport and football was never going to do enough to get him out. And that was in large part because of Salman and the forces around him with Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. And so for Australian Federation and representative of all of us, you, of me, of every participant, of 1.8 million people, everyone who loves football, to then turn around and support someone who is complicit in torture of athletes and who wasn't prepared to advocate publicly and support even FIFA's position for Hakeem, it really... It's devastating. It's devastating for everyone who was involved in the campaign. I think it's devastating for football globally, and it's devastating for Australian football in particular, to think that we truly have no basic standards against which we can hold ourselves and say, well, this just can't happen. And if you can't, if your basic standard is not torture of athletes, then I don't know what it is.
Craig, it's Josh here. And for those of our listeners who might not be really aware of Sheikh Salman and what his alleged rap sheet looks like, what are some of the accusations that have been levelled at him over the years?
He's got quite a civil number, but just quickly, back in 2011-12, he was involved in the crackdown on athletes in Bahrain, which were typically a part of the... right across the sporting community. And the Prince Nasser, who was head of their Olympic Committee at that time, publicly endorsed and nominated Salman as the chairman of a committee to identify and incarcerate athletes, high-profile athletes who were involved in a pro-democracy demonstration in the Arab Spring. So we know that he was the chair of a committee to identify athletes. He denies that that committee ever met. There's evidence that was in the public domain, which has all been taken down now off the internet by the Bahrain government because they clearly want these people in positions of governance in sport globally. That's part of their ambitions to whitewash their regime and the human rights abuses. Nevertheless, what happened is, at the very least, as the president of the Bahrain Football Association at the time, he didn't speak up, didn't protect anyone, including the national team footballers, one of which was Hakeem. So to give you an analogy, it would be like, you know, the president of the Football Federation of Australia allowing Socceroos to be incarcerated and tortured and saying nothing. Clearly, the most basic obligation of a sports official is to protect your players, and he did nothing to do so. We need an investigation into what that committee actually did, and other officials, for instance, the Prince at that time, is alleged to have personally tortured some of the athletes. and he is a member of the royal family alongside Sheikh Salman. So that was back then. He got in 2013 into the AFC presidency. There's been a Guam, the former Guam president has been convicted by the FBI of being involved in a scheme of bribery and corruption in order to bring Salman into that position. That's number two. And number three, he is beholden to the FIFA human rights policy, which requires him to advocate for and uphold the human rights of people like anyone inside the game, but particularly players like Hakim, and he refused to do so. In fact, he recused himself the day after Bahrain had submitted their paperwork in order to keep Hakim both in jail and try to get him extradited back, where we feel he would have been either tortured or perhaps could have lost his life. So there's a range of reasons, but in the end, the entire country and global football community just went through a huge campaign. It was clear to everyone that Salman both did nothing and perhaps, I believe, but needs to be investigated as to whether he obstructed the opportunity for Hakim to be freed. We actually had to fight against Salman, and now our own federation, even though Hakim is a player in Australia, as if that matters, but he's one of our own, and we've now supported him in an election. So he's at least complicit, if not implicit, in the torture of athletes, and he has just severely compromised the rights of one of our own players, who's now a national hero and was just given citizenship by the Foreign Minister and the Prime Minister only 10 days ago.
Craig, why do you think FFA have chosen to endorse Sheikh Salman?
You'd have to ask them that. All I see is some public comments around justification. I'm not surprised by that. That's what sport governance is. You know, the distance between sport officials and the political nature of their own decision making, which includes an immense amount of self-interest, and decisions based on, I think, a lot of weakness and lack of principle, lack of values, things that we as former players believe in very deeply. We see these resonate around the world in a whole range of sports, but particularly in football. It's a great example of what happened to Blatter. There was allegations of corruption and all these things for decades, really, many, many years. But everyone within the game and many of the sports officials are perfectly happy to do what they call play the game because they all benefit. They get into positions of senior influence in sport. And to be, you know, to be involved in AFC or in FIFA or in these chambers, for many people, is an end in itself. It's a wonderful thing to be travelling the world and being part of FIFA and part of AFC. But more than that, they benefit in all sorts of ways. So one of the justifications given was that Salman had increased the broadcast. Basically, all the justifications given were economic, and that's what happened under Blatter. The game continues to grow because it's the best game in the world, and we see that in Australia, actually. FFA do it a lot. Despite all the problems in the game and in many respects, failure to address a lot of the core issues that we have, you know, continually we hear about the growth in participation. Well, the game's grown again, as though that's the best measurement or benchmark as to what you're being paid to do. It's not, actually. The game is a phenomenal game. It's been growing for, you know, over the last 130-odd years. And every year it continues to grow in numbers. So the real job is to manage those numbers well. The real job is to create the infrastructure and the seamless integrated ecosystem for us to be able to participate in the game through. It's not just to say that it's growing financially. We know that. So it's not uncommon, but it is horrendous because whilst we've seen a lot of corruption and so on before, this is different. This is torture of athletes and this is our own player. So it's really a threshold issue. And I think it's one which the country of Australia finds abhorrent. I think any former player, and I'm sure all of the current players, find it absolutely... I can't say ridiculous because it's not funny, but just find it extraordinary and an issue which you can't get past. If we cannot say that this does not correspond with our sporting values, that means we've lost every essence of what we think that our game or indeed broader sport is about.
Yeah.
And Craig, you spoke about the cultural problems inside FFA and the disgusting lack of ethics during the recent FFA board elections. What kind of reforms do you think need to be made to the game in Australia? Because it seems as if the whole value system and maybe the incentives are a little bit misguided.
Oh, that's actually really well put. So in my view, we really don't have any values and we don't have any culture. And by culture I mean trust and unity, you know, genuine, right? We all believe in... See, what happened during the Hakeem campaign was we all believed in something and the goodwill from that, that the game was able to garner in Australia and around the world was really quite extraordinary. It may be unprecedented because I can't remember the last time global football fans fought for the life of a player. And we've just thrown that away on the grounds of I don't know what type of self-interest or other, and it demonstrates that we lack the real foundation of what we're about. But the people, though, what happened during the election and again during Hakeem campaign, and I think even the other night we went and raised some money for refugees. We had 700 people there. And so what continually comes through to me is that the community itself, of which I'm a part, and I by community I say outside of the governance or officials, we all believe in similar things. When we have something that we want to fight for, we are an extraordinary force. When we believe in a cause like refugees, because you know that's a big part of our game, multiculturalism, what we do when we come together is just simply extraordinary. But what we saw through the election is that those values are not a part of the foundation of selection of people. And we don't understand what our values are. We just know them when they're in front of us and we start to feel inspired and feel good about it. The game hasn't been able to encapsulate them. We don't understand, you know, what do we stand for as a game? And at the moment, what we stand for is, I think, change. People want, you know, they want to move on from the Lowy family and they want change, but I think much of it's change for change's sake. And I think the current board at the moment is probably trying to get a lot of short-term wins to try and build up what is a credibility deficit, and I'm really worried about that. I think we'd be better off saying, let's just take our time and make sure that we get a really detailed picture of what the future looks like for everyone, not just for vested interests, and they're the ones controlling it at the moment. So we're in what I think is a really, really difficult period. But ultimately, the answer to your question is it's like democracy more broadly in the country. The people, that is you and me, we don't have influence. If the participants in the game were able to vote, we'd have a very different board. Right? If the participants in the game were able to influence the direction of the game, we'd have very different priorities. If the general people in Australia were, if we genuinely had a representative democracy, and we clearly don't, right? Because we have not enough women in parliament. We don't have cultural diversity in parliament. So we're not being represented at the government level, political level, and we're not, in my view, we're not properly being represented in terms of sports governance. So I was reading a good article today, actually, by a law professor, sport and law, I think he's from Monash University, talking about the fact that sport governance and our constitution, for instance, puts the power in the hands of much of the state federations. There's no real rationale for that. It's just the reason is that we came from one model and we need a different model. Participants don't vote for the club boards, but it's the club boards that vote for associations, and the associations vote for the state bodies. So we actually don't get a vote. So the game is not run by us. And what I saw during the campaign is that the state bodies have outlived their usefulness, and having all of these multiple political levels and a federated model is no longer going to deliver what we need for the game. We're actually at a point where we really need to confront the very foundational problems that Frank Lowy didn't want to take on, and that is the fact that we don't get a voice. It's not representative. The board is not representative of the participants. That needs to happen. We need some people power to happen in football in the same way that it did in the Hakeem campaign. I think the Hakeem campaign basically encapsulates it. If it was up to sport governance or just governing bodies, FFA, AFC and FIFA, to save Hakeem, he would be in extreme peril. Okay? It was people stepping forward and making it happen, all of us participants, that created the circumstances to get him out. And I actually think that that's what's going to end up having to happen for the game. Because we kick the ball, we go down to Kembla Grange, and on an 8:15 p.m. on a Wednesday night, we've got 700 people from the South Coast. They're late into the night. We're nearly, almost midnight. We're still standing at that ground talking about football. That they're the people who are genuine, who love the game, and who always, every day, put the game first. And they need to start to have more of a voice, and we need to work out what that structure looks like to bring that to life, in my view.
And Craig, I think it's been heartening recently, the Hakeem campaign and how the football community really, really rallied together, as you're describing. But you're also describing a huge schism between how football is governed and what the rank and file fans and volunteers and people in clubland around Australia think and want. So what would you say to those people who, you know, have been inspired by this campaign, by your words recently, to try and change things, to try and get their voices heard?
Yeah, I'd say this. After what happened in the election campaign is we were able to do something very similar. We brought the football community together, and we've been divided for so very long. And we will always be divided while people manage the game who lack the trust of us, right? And they lack the credibility of the football community. For instance, you know, I understand next week, you know, there's these summits around the country at the moment, right? From, I think, I don't know, FFA management and board. And there's one, I understand the one the other night at Football New South Wales had what was, I guess, would be explained as a very disappointing audience. It wasn't the number of people that were expected. Next week is one to be had in Melbourne, and my understanding at the moment is that's been called off because actually no one's going. So if the game's in a position where the people who are managing it, the senior managers who are getting paid millions of dollars here collectively, and those who are in positions of governance, if people don't want to listen to what they have to say, you have to question now the credibility of, you know, this wide gap that you've identified. People who play and love and support and care for the game aren't listening to the voices because it's not credible to us. It's kind of like some of the politicians. You listen to them talking now in their interviews and you think, that's just not real. It's not coming from a real place. And for football fans, everything's real. Like, we feel things strongly and we know when someone else genuinely is trying to do the right thing for us, right? So off the back of that campaign, what was interesting is I said, look, we need to work out how to give participants more power in the game. And because their voice wasn't heard, and I think that hurt the game. Then in Hakeem, we were able to make people's voice be heard, and that included breaking down the power structures. We were able to break down what AFC were trying to obstruct. We were able to overcome the inadequacy of all of the football actors. We were able to force FIFA to act by confronting that power structure with people power and campaign. We need to work out how that's going to play a part in the game in future. So my message to them would be, the future of the game is about participants and grassroots having a say. And we need to get together, all of us who play and love the game, and we need to advocate for, in future, direct representation. We shouldn't allow, as we don't allow politicians, we shouldn't allow those in positions of sport governance to talk about democracy. I saw some of the board members afterwards saying, well, democracy is great. It wasn't democracy. It had nothing to do with democracy, right? Because the mass that play the game are not represented in any way. It's time for us to be represented, in my view. And this decision of Salman has distressed me. It's embarrassed the game. It certainly embarrassed me. And in some ways, it has angered me. But it's also given me further energy and motivation to say, OK, in future, we need the final stage of reform here, because I don't believe that our game is going to reach the potential we all strongly believe in unless we all of us, are able to have a voice. Because I'll tell you what, we make better decisions as a collective.
And Craig, we've got someone coming through on Twitter asking what you think of Jack Riley's proposal on this statement. On this station last week, he was saying that he thinks the state federations have outlived their usefulness.
Yeah.
And he thinks we should establish one governing body with some sort of branch offices in each state.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. We've been talking about it for decades. I mean, the federated model has been a thorn in the side of not just football, but actually I'd argue Australia more broadly, right? So I was reading a book recently by a professor from UNSW, who I know, who was talking about constitutional change. And, you know, finishing my law degree, so I did constitutional law reasonably recently. And the Constitution was written, was brought out in 1901 when we became federated. And what happened was, all it is a compromise between the six colonies at the time and then, you know, the Commonwealth. And that costs us a tremendous amount as a country. And I think the Constitution itself, it lacks values, it lacks articulation of what it means to be Australian. It lacks issues around national identity. We have no charter of human rights, all of these things, right? And it's interesting to me that that's also been replicated across in the sport model. And there is absolutely no reason for us to have all of the so many levels of politics through the game. And to the extent that politics is sustained and exists, I think personally we're never going to reach our potential. We need independence of thinking. We need expertise and the best people we can possibly get. And I don't think we have that. And thirdly, we need a fully aligned and unified game, and we're not going to get that under the current model. So the next stage of reform, it has to be driven from, I think, the grassroots saying, OK, it's time now for us to look at just a fully integrated model, top-down approach, and we need officers. We don't need politics in all of our states and territories.
And Craig, do you see yourself in politics in the future?
Look, I have long planned having an influence or a role in that area, yes, because the older I get, the more I think, I feel strongly that former players, particularly played for the country, we have an obligation, even if that's at our own risk. And I've been prepared to do that even in terms of the election at great risk in terms of my own employment and so on. I just think it's necessary. And I'm 50 next month. So I'm kind of at the stage of life where I say, well, you know, we've tried to contribute to football as much as possible, but we also need to contribute to the country. We can do that through the game. That's what we believe. That's our mission at SBS, started by Johnny and Les. But I also think that the country needs a lot of help. And we can bring some of our multicultural values. And I actually think Australia needs more football, right? And so, yes, I will at some point. When that happens, I don't know. The timing is always an issue. And I'm not sure quite when that will occur. But I want to try and have an influence on Indigenous reconciliation. That's extremely important to the country and to me. That's why I've been working in Indigenous kids football and Indigenous football for the last 15 years. I think the climate's a very significant issue. I think this concept around common people, and I'm one of them, I mean, no one's common, but by that I mean not in positions of, not members of parliament or so on, we need to have a much bigger say. I think this concept of democracy needs to be really challenged in Australia, and it certainly needs to be challenged in our sport. So I hope to do so in future. I'm just not quite sure when or in what capacity.
Well, Craig, your message has certainly resonated in the football community recently, and I'm sure it'll resonate in the wider community in Australia. You've been so generous with your time, and thank you so much for coming on FNR.
No worries, my pleasure.